Karbanga, M30.906. Chapter 9. Hasek smashed his closed fist down, striking the monster in its block-shaped forehead and breaking the bone beneath. It didn't die. It roared back, its grotesquely oversized jaws snapping to maul at his wrist. So he punched harder, working his armor's power system close to its limits and wrenching more physical energy from somewhere in his overworked body. It took two more heavy strikes to finally dull the rage behind those unearthly red eyes. Then a third to send the enormous creature slumping to the ground and sliding down the trench's inner wall. Hasek powered on up the slope, scrabbling amid a tide of falling crystal scree. His left leg was throbbing with a sharp pain that was becoming harder to ignore. His bolter was smashed, and his armor riddled with dents and gashes. The air was full of that terrible, never-ending roar, the Hain Gala, that came with every battle against these things. The sonic hell swelled and tore against his helm's protective ear shielding, wearing at his senses and dulling his reactions. He reached the lip of the slope and dropped heavily to one knee, panting for air. Above him, a tortured sky opened up, as orange as nerve gas and scratched with the black contrails of hammer munitions. A stormbird growled low overhead, its atmospheric drives spilling thick smoke and making the ground shake. A tumbled terrain of cut crystal spread out before him, flashing from explosions like some continent-wide scatter of broken glass. The Saddleback Northern Massif rose up against the fiery horizon like a perennial insult, still too far off to assault directly, but thumped now by ranged munitions. Everything in between was in motion, a seethe of moving earth that boiled and crashed like the sea. But it wasn't earth, and it wasn't sea. This was a living tide, a carpet of dark green flesh, banded by heavy iron armour and overlaid with the nightmare roar that had a life of its own, and swamped all else under its thickening boom and roll. Nothing else in the galaxy was like it. No other species could do this. No other sentient life form could meld and twist itself into a single amorphous glut of fused and over-ripened fury, ever expanding and powered by some locked deep gestalt furnace that only grew and grew until it felt inevitable it would reach out and smother the stars themselves. No other army marched under flickering green-edged pressure waves that split eardrums and shriveled timid hearts. No other army ran into the clash of blades out of nothing more than primordial instinct, with no other thought but to feel the rage and the hot blood spatter and to gorge on it. There was no deliberative malice there, no thought for wider strategic goals. There was just a will surge to murder, thrumming up from clotted basal ganglia and boiling through black blood vessels, animating the steel-hard muscle bundles that swung blunt-edged cleavers like turbo hammers and split the ground apart beneath clawed feet. The Hain, the Orc, the Greenskin, greatest and most numerous of all the Xenos threats ever faced by humanity. So perfectly evolved into instruments of violence that Imperial scholars had even postulated the wild conjecture that they had been purposely bred for it. Fearless, incredibly strong, horrifically belligerent, fecund and tenacious, there had never been and would never be, many reckoned, a more deadly enemy. And now they were on the charge again, roused to apoplexy by previous attacks, and faced once more by the spear's edge of a Legiones Astartes assault. Hasek was joined on the ridge by his Keshig guardmaster, Kogal, then by more warriors as they fought their way out of the trench lines. Three brotherhoods, over 1,000 fighters, cut and hacked and shoved and kicked their way to the tipping point, their blood-soaked progress overshadowed by the thudding boom of Legion artillery pieces. Stormbirds and thunderhawks hung in the air on smoggy columns of downdraft, pouring heavy bolter fire into the oncoming hordes. On the right flank, a column of mobile armour from the 88th Cohort Solar Auxilia trundled out of crystalline cover, shattering glassy outgrowths and opening up from main battle cannons in a rolling, echoing series. On the left flank, perfectly timed to join the combined assault, more Legion warriors in pale ivory battleplate poured up the trench slopes and out into the open, charging in tight-set ranks and chewing up ground at a ferocious pace. Despite the similar livery, they were not of the 5th Legion, but the 21st Company of the 16th Legion, the Lunar Wolves, led into battle by their captain, Galkusa Rior. The Scions of Horus were as battle-worn as their cousins in the Ordu, and fought through the pain just as doggedly. Every metre of ground was taken after exhausting bouts of brutal hand-to-hand combat. Every orc downed was replaced by another, then another, each one swarming up out of the infinite well of bodies that churned and erupted like some vast organic magma well. Bolter magazines clattered empty after perilously brief intervals, and then the hand-to-hand fighting would begin in earnest. Space Marines crunched in face-to-face with the enemy, power fists and energy weapons snagging with neon disruptor charge. Tanks surged up out of the tangled trench lines, rocking on the uneven terrain and unloading lasbeams into an oncoming tsunami of unbound slaughter. Hasek was running again now, forging his designated path towards the distant saddleback, lashing out with his glaive in withering circles. His honour guard stayed close, bludgeoning any Xenos that weren't dispatched by the heavy blows from his Guan Dao, unleashing precious blasts of bolter shells into the swirl of thrown bodies. Progress slowed. The Legionis Astartes were at their best in fast-moving battles, where superior dexterity and accuracy could be brought to bear, while the Greenskins prospered where their greater numbers could deaden the vigour of combat. The Xenos understood this perfectly, whether by instinct or through battle cunning learned over decades, and so their onward race into the emptying barrels of the Imperial guns was hardly mindless, but instead played to a dreadful innate strength. In that choked, dagger-edged terrain, their unmatched kinetic energy was unleashed in a lead-heavy wave, and so the contest slowed once more under the wearyingly familiar weight of grinding, punishing attrition. Hasek, seeing it unfold again, roared in frustration, lashing out with his blade and decapitating a hulking Xenos warrior in a single strike. Even before its stinking head had thumped to the earth, three more were lumbering into contact.
"We will not make the objective, Khan,"
foxed the earthy voice of Rior from a long way away. There was no condemnation there, just a statement of fact. The combined Legion forces had been prosecuting their exhausting fight against the Greenskins for too long to expect any easy victories, and there had been no disagreement about making the attempt to break out of the trench line salient. Hasek fought on grimly, driving himself onwards through force of will. His warriors surged with him, but the attack front was becoming ragged. Over on the right flank, the auxiliar armour was slowing down, caught by a vicious countercharge from heavily armoured Xenos infantry. Pulverizing fire from the swooping air support seemed to do little to slow the onslaught, and even the metronomic detonation of the tank's main battle cannons only cleaved paths ahead for a few moments before the gaps were filled.
"We will not miss the rendezvous,"
Hasek growled into the vox, spinning on his heel before plunging the point of his weapon into the chest of a racing greenskin. He only just hauled it out before another one launched itself at him, and thick blades clashed in a welter of thrown sparks.
"Take the secondary target,"
Rior grunted, his voice betraying similarly heavy exertion. The huge battlefront was slowly dissolving into a thousand static engagements. Orcs seemingly burst from the ground underfoot, hauled into snarling life and thrown into contention by the omnipresent species roar that made the crystals resonate, splinter and crack. Hasek roared back at them, screaming his frustration out. He slashed wildly, severing tendons and slicing armour, gaining a few precious metres before the ranks closed again. The secondary target loomed over to his right, high ground topped by a thicket of translucent geodesic facets, easier to reach than the saddleback, defensible, but several kilometres south of where he had promised to bring them. The harrowing fighting in the trench network had taken too much out of his forces, and now they were paying the price. The red sun sank a little further, sliding through turbulent skies towards the jagged eastern horizon. The tips of the crystal forest glinted pink and lilac, glowing from the last of the heat that would soon drain from the air and turn the battlefield into a semi-frozen wasteland. Gogal caught a heavy blow from a Xenos warrior and was sent sprawling, shattering the ground beneath him. Hasek heard screams as an auxiliary tank hatch was breached, its crew butchered as the Xenos swarmed inside the shell. He fought on, head down now, felling the orc that had floored the master of his keshig and shouldering into the next in line. Gogal got to his feet, ignoring the long slick of blood along his breastplate, slaying with an edge of shame now. But this could not go on. Forward progress was at a crawl, and if it slowed any further, the assault risked stalling, collapsing, and becoming a massacre. Hasek ran a visor-overlaid tactical scan for the 20th time that hour, glancing in a split second over a swinging virtual hemisphere of locator runes. It could be done. It could be salvaged, but only at the cost of more precious time.
"Secondary target," he voxed to Rior.
Then the same to Marshal Motor of the Auxilia Field Command, then to the Brotherhood Khans under his watch.
"Repeat, secondary target. All units switch trajectory. We take it before the sun sinks."
The reaction was instant. Every warrior had been waiting for it, guessing it would come, drilled to respond without hesitation. The Lunar Wolves squads ploughed right, sweeping back from their forward positions and pulling away under the cover of shortening mortar barrages. The auxiliary tanks swiveled and powered eastwards, making for vantages picked out in aerial reconnaissance 3 local days ago. The White Scars maintained their trajectory, pushing along the gore-soaked path that would take them under the lengthening shadow of the rise. But now their aspirations were more limited, and soon their allies would be drawing close in on either flank to cut off any counterattack. The orcs sensed the change of focus, and their infernal roar ramped up further. The world's dying light tinged green, a lurid mix with the deepening orange, and they pushed back harder, knowing they had the chance to shatter the attack now. From somewhere deep within their horde, unearthly shrieks pierced the tumult, and lancing strands of glowing emerald danced across the incipient storm. Hasek crashed into the fray again, swinging his guandao two-handed. His vision was shaking at the edges now, his muscles throbbing. All that powered him was defiance, a rage almost as blind as that of the Xenos who still charged at him, over and over, a rampaging bulwark of maddened flesh that just would not stop.
"Hey, Chagoras!"
he thundered bitterly, his vox augmeter briefly sending the battle cry flooding up against the sonic wall before him.
"Kagan!"
came the response, briefly immense, briefly dominating, before all was swept up by that devouring sweep of psychic battle mania. Hasek barely looked up. Sweat ran down the inner curve of his helm, salty from dehydration. They would make the ridge that night. They would fortify it, and they would hold it. That remained within their power. But the saddleback had been the goal that he had promised his Primarch, and that would not be taken yet. He spat a gobbet of his own blood, tasting it as it ran against the heated metal of his vox grill. His breathing hammered in his ears, his heart thudded.
"A good enemy."
He remembered saying it 8 years ago, as if it were a dream or half-remembered jest, something to be uttered under the sun while all things remained possible. He fought on, jaw set against the pain, wading through the mire of alien screams that went on and on until madness seemed almost like a release. Not anymore. The world was designated 4-68-99, though everyone save the fleet's expeditionary cartographers called it Garbangar, which was as close as human lips could get to what the orcs had named the planet in their own debased tongue. Perhaps it wasn't even their name for it. Perhaps their endless chant,
"Gara, Bana, Gara,"
meant something else entirely. No one cared anymore. Garbangar was what the legionaries called the place when they were not swearing at it, or cursing the hour it was brought into existence, or launching another round of orbital strikes to smash the life out of it and send its glassy surfaces skittering like thrown baubles. It was the Khan who had determined it would be taken. The stellar empire carved out by the Xenos warlord, Garluk, compassed 50 worlds, a huge swathe of the void comparable in physical scale, if not in culture or accomplishment, with growing Ultramar itself. Some strongholds were mere rocks infested with roving bands of feral greenskins. Others were fortress planets, swollen with Xenos nests, their rusting parapets crawling with legions of conquest-bloated warriors. It was still a mystery how the orcs had spread so effectively between systems. The creatures used technology of a sort, hulking constructions of scrap metal and looted parts, ramshackle and prone to catastrophic failure. It was understood that the Xenos drifted from sector to sector in great hulks, dating back to the dawn of interstellar travel. But how this process was coordinated to a degree sufficient for the construction of void empires was wholly unknown. However, by some means, Garluk had nevertheless tightened his grip on an entire subsector, maintaining communications between worlds and organizing offensive raids across multiple battlefronts. A planet would fall to Imperial assault, only for its defenses to be swamped a month later by counterattacks from a dozen bordering Orc-held systems. So the Xenos knew. By some arcane means, they knew how their seemingly anarchic empire was ordered, and what had come to challenge it, and they defended that realm with both ferocity and invention. Early optimism from Imperial Army commanders had long since given way to weary acceptance. The many greenskin empires would not be like the other conquests, concluded in months and followed by triumphal compliance missions. In the early days, there were even those who believed the clash of such closely matched powers might herald the end of the Imperium's expansion, and despaired of the vast resources required to take on such a massive and unending vortex of violence. But the Legiones Astartes had been made for foes such as these. And finally, the Xenos defences began to crumble. Attack after attack was launched, smashing sentinel worlds in waves of meticulously prepared landings. It never became easy. It was always bloody, always hard-fought and nakedly vicious. But slowly, the current of the battle began to turn, and gradually, the borders of Garluk's fiefdom collapsed. Thus came Garbangar's turn for destruction. The crystalline planet stood at the confluence of warp routes, linking a dozen other systems, three of which were already under attack by White Scar's forces under Geohun's command. Annihilating it would negate the opportunity for flanking counteroffensives, crippling Garluk's ability to project power across the entire subsector. As Horus pushed on towards the ring of fortress planets at the centre, the White Scars would strike their blow here, clearing the way for the inevitable assault on the heart of it all. Everything was interlinked, a delicate skein of time-critical moves that needed to take place in strict order. Delay here imperiled advances elsewhere. All knew this. The Khan, the Allied forces, the Imperial High Command, even the Orcs themselves. Thus, continual progress was of the essence, one way or the other. For one side, hesitation was fatal. For the other, every extra day gave them a chance to divide their enemies and recover lost ground. Hasek thought on that as he slumped down to his haunches.
Not fast enough.
The sky was a deep black red now, drained of all but the last rays of the long-departed sun. Stars scattered vividly across a thin atmosphere sky, clustered more thickly than on either Terra or Chogoris, the product of a world sunk deeper towards the galaxy's core. The sounds of battle were still everywhere. Legion forces had taken the ridge 4 hours ago, and since then every effort had been expended in making the gains secure. The Auxilia's engineers had responded admirably, quickly drawing up mechanized siege engines and pile-driving fixed defense stations into position. Troops held in reserve during the first push through the trench lines were deployed across the ridge's northern perimeter, given Legion squads to stiffen their resolve, and charged with keeping the newly won lines impenetrable. Much of the rest of the auxiliar contingent were exhausted by several days of constant fighting and needed rest. Their tanks were charred and overloaded, power packs flatlining, ammunition chambers empty, their crews slumped across the carcasses of their charges. The orcs had not gone away, but even they could not assault forever. And so they hung back out on the open ground, chanting that damnable roar over and over again to banish any sleep the humans might have hoped of getting. From the deeper distance came the roll and boom of metal-skinned drums, and green flickers of psychic force danced in the night's depths. The atmosphere of hostility never went away. After a while, the Imperial troops heard it in their half-snatched dreams, saw it in every stray shaft of livid orange sunlight, felt it in their trembling fingers. Even the battle-hardened felt it. Even the Space Marines. Hasek blinked away the fatigue and looked up to see the familiar outline of Galkuza Rior crunching towards him. The Lunar Wolves captain was in a bad way, his right pauldron clawed and hanging off his shoulder, his knee guards crackling from ripped power lines. Hasek rose. Others of the Fifth Legion that were gathered around him saluted wearily, making the Aquila in the standard Imperial manner.
"Foul creatures," Rior said grimly,
his thick voice giving away his own weariness.
"Foul indeed,"
Hasek agreed, speaking in Gothic.
"Strong, though."
Rior activated a hololithic tactical display, and the night air between them shimmered into wireframes.
"We are 3 days south of where we need to be." "I know it. Ideas?"
Rior and Hasek had conferred often during the previous 6 months of heavy campaigning. The Lunar Wolves warrior was gruffer and harder-edged, raised amid gangers and renegades, but still an accomplished commander with an open mind and an acute strategic grasp.
"None for me. You? Renewed orbitals?"
Hasek offered, without conviction. Orbital strikes were not a favoured weapon on Garbangar. For one thing, they were phenomenally expensive in terms of resources, which the fleet needed for low-orbit operations against the hundreds of orc-crewed scrap ships that still plagued them. For another, the world's unique landscape limited their effectiveness. Most of the terrain was a close-packed mass of huge geodesic outcrops. These translucent crystals were hard-wearing and offered plentiful cover, meaning that the only bombardments capable of causing significant damage required the Legion forces to pull back for several kilometres, giving the orcs a clear warning that they needed to go to ground. In any case, the devastation caused by such strikes made the subsequent advance almost impossible. It was hard enough fighting through the crystal canyons when they were intact. It was far harder when every square metre was choked with tangled man-length shards of ceramite-piercing crystal debris. Rior did not demur immediately. He leaned against the nearest glittering column and beckoned for one of his troops to approach.
"If we have to. The Spite's hammer is within hail range for another 12 hours. But we both know the limitations."
The Lunar Wolves warrior approached. His ivory armour was scrawled in black lines, spidery like thrown ink. A blue symbol, an open book, had been daubed on his shoulder guards. His gauntlets were blackened, as if he'd held them inside a furnace for a long time.
"This is Jereth," Rior said. "Librarian. I didn't think he studies psychic powers. Doesn't use them. We're not bloody savages."
It was hard to tell if Rio was smiling under his helm.
"We've analysed the sonic aegis generated by the Xenos," Jereth said. "Again. We know they use it to fortify themselves. We know they have a shaman caste placed beyond our reach, summoning the effect. The crystals, we think, are being used here as amplifiers. It makes this landscape a particularly troubling proposition."
Hasek looked at the young warrior wearily.
"I have snipers deployed to drop any shaman they can lock onto. They've not got close. The Hain are not fools."
"But you have your own
shamans. Jareth sounded almost embarrassed to use the term. Hasek smiled dryly.
And they're kept busy. Borga, tell them.
A White Scars legionary emerged from the shadows, just as battered as the rest. He held a skull-topped staff in one hand, but was careful not to place any weight on it. It was a weapon, not a crutch.
We can fight the effect, he said.
His voice was a soft Chagorian burr, far quieter than the others, and with a deeper accent.
But there are thousands in the soul field, and we are few. That is the problem.
But still they're the key, said Rior. Kill the shamans, the field weakens. We've seen it before. They're getting better at protecting them, said Hasek.
Then we must become better at killing them, said Jareth.
Hasek laughed sourly.
Simple as that.
It cannot be destroyed, Borgal said. They feed off conflict, opposition. This world amplifies the effect. We can only resist it, not end it.
For a moment, the rest of them stood silently, saying nothing. The dull crump of mortar fire echoed out from lower down the ridge as the auxilia kept up its defensive barrage. It was unlikely the Xenos would try to assault the ridge that night. The slopes were steep and treacherous, and the dug-in defensive positions would make an attack ruinous. They were happy to wait, out on the plains, preparing and strengthening for the attack they knew the humans would have to make sooner or later. More boots crunched through the crystal scree, announcing the arrival of the auxilia commanders, Marshal Enelope Mota, and her tribune, Fased Exandras. Both went helmless, and their drawn faces gave away the toll the attacks had taken on them.
My lords, Mota greeted them, making the sign of the Aquila. A defensive perimeter complete and operational. My thanks for the assistance from your warriors. Without them, this would not have been possible.
She was worried. Mota was a decent officer and a tireless soldier, but she was not a space marine. Fighting for so long against the blast wave of the Orc's psychic aegis, and seeing one's forces slowly mauled by its constituents, would wear away at the strongest of souls. Supplies were low, and the chance of respite zero. The rendezvous at Saddleback had already been delayed, and a further setback could see the armoured units begin to struggle as fuel tankers and ammo haulers were drained dry. She didn't ask the question. She was too much of a consummate professional for that. But it was there in her eyes all the same, hovering behind everything she said.
What's the plan now? When do we move again? Will we survive this?
Hasek didn't have answers. He looked up at Rior, and a sour kind of understanding passed between them.
Your service,
Hasek said to Mota, barely looking at her.
Exemplary. I wish I could give you time to recover.
He looked up to the north, out into the gathering night.
But that would be, sad to say, only slow suicide, he said grimly. So prepare your troops. We assault again at dawn.